Good evening, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Tri-State Sports Show. Or Sports Guys.
Whatever you want to call it, Neil.
I say we go with Sports Show.
Sports Show.
Yeah, because I feel like we're alienating the female factor by going with guys.
You know? I know, because we usually do have a lot of women in studio.
Yeah, tons. J-Mo is always making cameos.
She has been on the show, featured exclusively, extensively. We're going to try to get Katie Mooney to call in. Katie, if you're out there, our number is... Whatever it is. 718-392-0430.
That's the PIN number.
That's the PIN number. If you call that in, we'll get
you on. Skype in as the host. That's what you want to plug in.
This show is brought to you by Katie Moody, the worst person in the history of Johns Hopkins University.
Yeah, and so I'm Neil Lynch. You're Mike DePalma.
Yep.
And he's Tony D.
Tony D. God save JT. Hopefully he's staying out of harm's way over there, overseas, wherever he is, wherever he may be. It's a dangerous world out there, JT. Get home safe, brother.
Yeah, the spiders. That's all I'm going to say. Big spiders.
Yeah, man.
You got to watch out. So what are we talking about on today's show?
We got a lot to get to, and everybody at home, I know there's a lot of, like, premieres. You got whatever, your Modern Family. You're going to tune in to us, DVR Modern Family. We got a jam-packed show here today. We got to start with the officials. I know normally we start with the local teams, but it's, we really have to start with the officials here. We went into it last week, voiced our displeasure with the replacement refs.
I was cool with them.
You were on board with them. And you know what? God bless you for that. I like that. You stick to an opinion. I admitted I was wrong. You weren't going there.
Nope. I had a three strike rule, and they went out hard this week.
Yeah, they didn't go down, they did not go down looking.
They swung big time.
Obviously, all weekend was brutal. Even watching the Jets game, you know, there was like four block in the back penalties on kick, you know, on punts, which is, it kind of goes to show you that those type of plays happen almost on every punt. So it's like, unless it's egregious, normally the normal refs play. I mean, it was ridiculous. Every punt was a block in the back. It got to be ridiculous. So it was like that all weekend, culminating with the play. I didn't see it till the next morning. I'd fallen asleep.
Here's my,
I did have the Packers, so I was one of the people in the $350 million that changed hands because of that call on the negative side.
You got the refund, though, right?
No, I was not. Whatever website that guy was on, you know, those are the online guys.
Yeah.
The people I deal with...
They don't deal in refunds.
No refund.
All sales are final?
All sales are final with the folks I'm dealing with here on the rough and tumble streets of Norwalk. They're not going to be like, okay, Mike... We're going to let this one slide. So, unfortunately, I did not win that game. But, going through the whole weekend, culminating in that, I mean, and it was just, you know, explosion on Twitter, explosion on Facebook, everybody, rah, 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 you know, people that never seen football before, all of a sudden experts on refereeing and all that.
Yeah, there were websites that strictly cater to, like, children 8 to 12, and they were talking about it.
Nick
so.
Jr. opened Yo Gabba Gabba the next morning with it. And that was it. Broby was on there breaking
about it.
DJ Lance was breaking
it
up.
Riff to Broby.
It was a brutal call. The call it was the best thing that could have happened. I know everybody's been saying that over and over, that it finally was like, okay, guys, this is a joke. But
the straw that broke the camel's back.
It really was. But what really shows all weekend long was just their complete lack of control of the game. You know, we joked around last week where even when they're calling penalties, they don't even do it properly. The game slows down. You saw it on Sunday night where Bill Belichick actually grabbed the guy and then goes on to say after the game, you could look at my track record. I'm not that kind of guy. Well, actually, you don't have a great track record. You're known to be a jerk, and you've been suspended and fined heavily for Spygate. So you're not exactly on the up and up there, Billy B. But, hopefully something's going to happen. My question to you is, everybody on talk radio the last 2 days, whether it's Boomer and Carton, whether it's, Mike and Mike and all that, they're all calling Roger Goodell's got to come out, and they're really hammering Roger Goodell. And I don't think Roger Goodell is a great guy by any stretch of the imagination, but this guy, his whole job, he's appointed by the owners, he's paid by the owners. And his job is not to even put a good product on the field, as much as everybody wants to say. His job is to make the league money. So until there's an impact financially on this, he's going to do what he's going to do financially. He's only looking at the bottom line. And that's just the way of the world. It's a business, and that's his job. His job is not to make it – his job is to make it as entertaining as to get the most money for the NFL. And so far, ratings this year are higher than they were last year, so it has an impact on it.
Yeah. I mean – You're going to think I'm crazy, but I honestly think that, and I might have mentioned this last week, that the players and the coaches are going out there with the mindset that they're going to do whatever they can.
100%.
It's not about reducing penalties. It's about how much can I get away with,
mm-hmm.
and what can I get away with. So,
and how many times can I throw my arms up and get the late flag?
Right.
And that's what they do, yeah.
And so I don't have the numbers in front of me. I wish I did. But if you look at it, and if you look at, say, there were the regular officials, there would be like 30 penalties a game.
Yeah.
40 penalties a game.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it has been an uglier brand of football. It's one of the one things I do agree with Francesco's
going on. So I think part of the blame, you know, obviously these refs are, a lot of them are just straight up unqualified. They're guys that are not even competent for the lingerie football league.
Yeah, that's tough though.
When the LFL comes out and says, check this out, these guys can't even do our games.
Yeah.
And you know, they're not, a lot of them wouldn't even be considered for D1.
Oh no.
A lot of
D3
and high school guys. I mean, these
middle school. One guy had to go coach a middle school game. We don't even have middle school football in Norwalk.
But I mean, and these are just, it's getting to the point now where I feel like they should have auditions before each game. You know, just come off the street, and if you can call, you know, 5 minutes of the game without completely butchering it, then we'll suit you up.
We'll suit you up. There you go.
Because I mean, you're finding out that these guys are just ordinary Joes who are just fans.
Yeah, that's right. One guy,
a fan.
Had to
go to one guy out of there, same game, because he was a Saints fan.
The guy was a Saints fan. One guy has Shady McCoy on his fantasy team.
And now the guy, there's a rumor now that the guy who made the touchdown call Monday night is a Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
Oh. And you could, I could sense
you
that.
Can't go three blocks in this country without finding a Seahawks fan.
Yeah.
That's just, hey, that's not the NFL's fault. That's like America's team right there, the Seattle Seahawks.
But no, I when he after the review, when he made that touchdown catch, you saw him turn slightly to Pete Carroll, give him the wink, and then
we're going skydiving, Petey.
We're going clubbing after this.
Yep.
Clubbing then skydiving. I know a club that offers skydiving.
Yeah. Seattle, anything goes, dude.
Yeah, so I think there's blame to go all the way around, because the players are on the refs, the regular refs side, because the, you know, unions siding with unions, players versus owners
yep.
with the commish. So there's a lot of blame to go around right now, and you know, if this is as bad as it's going to get, I mean, the Packers have threatened the boycott now to just not play.
Well there's two camps of boycotting. There's this one camp that people are saying, well, the players really got to stand up and go out there, and on their first drive, kneel down three plays and punt, and then there'll be this complicit agreement on by the other team that they will just then nail down three
just
times.
Just like the
and
Bucks and the Giants,
yeah,
no problem.
Yeah, right. Because they'll do the wink. Hey guys, I'm gonna kneel down and punt. Yeah, right. Hopefully, they don't play the Bucks next week. Then there's that, which is obviously a joke. That'll never happen. And then there's the movement, this online movement for the fans. We got to take this. You know, we're the product. We own this league. It's our money. So we're either gonna not watch football, or they want you, if you're going to the game, to not show up until the second quarter. I have tickets to Sunday's game. I will be there for kickoff.
Yeah.
So I'm not part of that movement. It obviously, it's a bad product that they're putting out there as far as the referees goes, and the quality of the game has gone down. But that's such an unrealistic
There's
thing.
A lot of hyperbole going on, because I stayed up to watch the end of the
you
game.
You know what I blame it on? That Coney video. Everybody thinks they could do
right?
this like online movement. Everybody's
yeah.
into a movement. Occupy Wall Street. They think that we
just
can
just give up. Everyone just give up.
Nothing works like that.
Exactly.
Never.
Don't
give me that small group of citizens changes the world. In fact, it's the only thing I ever did. No, you're not going to change the world.
Not in our life.
Not on Facebook.
Yeah.
Not on the book. I'll tell you that right now. So that's a joke. But it's all kind of a moot point because, all day we were getting reports that they're right up. It's basically, it's a handshake deal. They're going to, in the next hour, it's going to break. In the next hour, it's going to break. Well, now it's 8:15 and it still hasn't broken officially. Yet that it's been done, but they're saying they get a deal done tonight. They're going to have the regular refs in for tomorrow night's game somehow.
That's no, it's not.
That's what they said. That's what Finn Francesa said.
I would hope they do, because then you're going to have
if they don't
get him in, you're going to have these two teams. They're going to have to play with the replacement.
I honestly think if they don't have him in for tomorrow, they can't. I don't know how they could do that.
I agree.
And not have him in for, because you're going to get the. Even the refs are going to be mad, like, whoa, the crew that was supposed to work tomorrow night's game is going to be like, well, I'm not getting paid. They only get paid per game. It's not like they get a salary. So you're going to have all – I think if they can't get them in the game for tomorrow, I don't think they're going to do it for Sunday.
Yeah, no, I think they would – I would think they would have to wait. Yeah, I'm just like, just make it fair all the way around. No.
Yeah, because you know someone's going to gripe about the fact that they're, you know, somehow that favors or either someone's going to come out and say it favored the Ravens and Browns, or someone from the Ravens or Browns is going to come out and say, oh, well, we were hampered or handicapped because they had the replacements. But the thing that drove me crazy about that when I watched, you know, ESPN SportsCenter got record ratings after the game.
Was it the parody songs that came after? Or did those get you aggravated? Because it got me aggravated. Go ahead. Sorry.
It was Trent Dilfer and Steve Young with these, like, emotional speeches.
Yeah.
About how the lore and the legend of the NFL is crumbling before our eyes.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, shut up. It's football.
It's 3 weeks. They're going to work it out. This is it now. This is our NFL.
Yeah, you know, this is what you get.
This is totally, you know, the new NFL. Yeah. You know, like, you know, a freaking bomb hit. And now we're dealing with
Mad Max out there.
Yeah.
And they're just the end of the world. Yeah, Francisco gave that same speech yesterday.
Boomer and Carton. Carton gave a speech this today, a really fiery speech about how Roger Goodell's putting his head in the sand. And, you know, you don't just release a press you don't just release a statement. You got to go on camera and, I just think it's so overblown. It's like, yeah, we get it. Everyone,
it
shut up.
It stinks. You have a 50-50 chance of getting it to work your way. For me, as a Jet fan, and we're going to get to the Jets and that, you know, with the Revis injury, I hope that they play with the replacement refs because maybe we'll get one of those breaks. I'd rather have a chance of a bad call. It's like, you know, I agree. It's terrible. And
I would be worried. I still think it's too early to get that outrageously upset. I think if you start to get the playoff hunt and they're still on that field, still making bad calls, and teams' playoff lives are at stake, that's when it's going to get real ugly. And I honestly don't think it's going to reach that point.
When you're talking about, and they broke it down, the cost per team per week, and it's somewhere just shy of $100,000 a week per team to give the refs this pension that they want to keep the pension in place. And it's basically the league wants to take away the pension and have them contribute to it. And, you know, they're saying you're part-time employees. And in most of the country, if you're a part-time employee, you don't get any kind of pension, let alone one you can contribute to. But you got to realize this is clearly over the last 3 weeks you've seen this is a very specialized industry. And it's not like, you know, a carpenter somewhere where you can find another carpenter to do that work. You can't find other people to do this work because it's a unique skill that you learn over time and nobody else does it. So it is silly that they're really – you know, digging the line in the sand over this $100,000 a game per week per team or whatever it is. But like I said, I not to defend Roger Goodell, but I would be disappointed. Not disappointed. I'd be surprised if he were to come out and say that these refs stink. I mean, they're in the middle of a negotiation. His job is to make the league money. And even though it's, you know, a couple million dollars over the course of the year, that's what he's hired to do. So that's what he's doing. What do you want him to do? Just say, okay, we screwed up, and that's the only reason he makes the big bucks. If he's just going to, you know, bow down to pressure from the media or from fans or whatever, if this is something that they're principled about, he can't just be – and then why is he getting paid? Anybody could just sit in there and stick their, you know, finger in the wind and say, okay, well, everybody's angry, I'm going to do this.
Yeah, and I don't know that in the history of the NFL you've ever had a game overturned by the league.
Right.
I mean, like, let's get serious. There's probably, like, a dozen or more instances where there's been horrible calls at the end of the game or, you know, a coin toss that was incorrectly called.
Remember the Calvin Johnson catch 2 or 3 years
Lions
ago?
Bears.
When he put the ball down and they were like, this is ridiculous. So that's not what this, you know.
And that cost them the game.
And I think they finished 8-8 that year or something.
And they missed the playoffs. So it's like.
There's no way they were going to go review it and say, you know, they can't do that.
Yeah.
That's not in the rules of the game. They reviewed it, whatever. But
I think all the teams out there should take note that if there's ever another Hail Mary, it's going to be Royal Rumble style.
Oh, that's it, yeah.
People are going to be like, crotch shots.
Oh,
like,
it's going to be, like, yeah, like, what was that game? You throw the ball, you call a number out, and everybody just jumps forward or whatever it is.
With, like, dogfights and stuff?
I don't know what the name of the game was. I think it was called 500 or something. Yeah. I don't know. We used to play it and just get all kinds of bloodied up.
Kill the guy with the ball.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's really all I got to say about the refs. I mean, hopefully they get something done tonight. If they do, it makes me think that it's not a reactionary thing to what just happened. If they were able to put all this in place with airfare and contracts and everything, and these people all have other jobs that means that this was already in the works. I don't think it was a reactionary thing to what happened on Monday night. They had this scheduled meeting for yesterday no matter what, and they must have already had the groundwork in place if there's a possibility they're going to play tomorrow. That's just logistically, there's no way. I mean, Bud Selig said they can't decide the World Series based on the record because they need 7 weeks to organize hotel rooms for that. But they're going to be able to do this overnight and get airfare and, okay, you got to get off work and this and that. These guys are all the jobs. I don't know. I agree with you. It's just something for the media to talk about. It's horrible. If I was a Packers fan, I'd be flipping out. But it, you know, it's not the end of the world. I still will watch as much football as I possibly can on Sunday. I'll watch the game tomorrow night. I'll watch the game Monday night. It's not going to affect me. You're taking yourself too seriously. If you think that you, little Joe Sixpack, is going to be like, nope, I'm watching Dance with the Stars tonight. They got some new Bigfoot footage. I'm going to check that out. I think they got them. I think we got the evidence we need to move forward with this whole thing. I like Bigfoot shows.
Yeah.
So I probably will be flicking back and forth. So I don't know. So why don't we get into the Giants then?
Okay.
You know, we talked about the Giants. They were, you know, as we were doing our show last week, it was the pregame for the show into the beginning of the game, and we talked about all the reasons why it was going to be a tough game for them.
That they were going to lose, yeah.
Yeah, all the reasons why, all these injuries and all this stuff. And the Giants, maybe more so than any other team in sports, not just football, they are just able to never make an excuse for injuries, never make an excuse for anything, which I think is a testament to their organization as a whole. But, you know, if that was the Jets, and I'm the biggest Jet fan there is, and they lost all the players. They lost one player, Revis. Granted, he's their best player. And they're already, I mean, now Joe McKnight's playing corner, and the whole thing is screwed up, and they have a built-in excuse to go 6-10. The Giants, they never look that way. It's always, okay, we're going to win with what we have. This is what we have. Maybe that's Tom Coughlin. I think it goes even beyond. I do think Tom Coughlin's a big reason, but I think it even goes beyond him. And it's just that's the organization. This is we're going to win. This is what we got.
Well, yeah, and they were talking about it last Thursday night that they have this mantra, next man up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like this guy fell down, who's going to take his gun and who's going to go into battle. You know, it's that kind of mentality, and it starts, and everyone kind of nitpicked at Tom Coughlin for being a disciplinarian, for being having that militant kind of approach to the game.
Yeah.
But it's little by little, it starts to add up, and you start to sway your players, you start to instill that kind of, but people have to buy into it. The veterans have to buy into it, and then it trickles down to the rookies. Because the rookies come in, they see people like Eli or Tuck or whoever, you know, getting to the meeting 15 minutes early and, you know, coming down on you if you miss a voluntary workout or whatever. So with that said, I'm still really surprised and impressed with the way that they were able to bounce back, because I wasn't so worried about Andre Brown. And I know it was only two or three quarters that he played against the Bucs, but he just looked so good running the ball that I thought that they were going to be able to run the ball fairly well against Carolina, not to the extent that they did.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like guys like Ramsey Barton stepping up.
Yeah,
he finally.
Yeah, and you mentioned him in one of our preseason shows. It's like this might be the year if he gets an opportunity.
Well, this might be the year. This has to be the year.
Yeah, he was on the bubble of getting cut.
Right. Like I don't think they were going to invest another year in him. So, but for me it was weird because going into the season I was looking at the Panthers to be the division winner.
Mm-hmm.
I had no faith in the Saints, and I had no faith in the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
I thought this was the year the Panthers step it up and they win the division. And I got a first-hand look on Thursday of why they're not even going to come close.
No.
I mean, they basically shifted their entire coverage to Cruz, and they let Barton run the same route at least 8 times in a row, and he caught it every time. So 15 yards.
Yeah.
It was just a dig. It was like a 10 to 15-yard dig. Eli had all the time in the world, and that was a big question mark coming in the game, was the offensive line. I know the deal went down, but I'm starting to think that deal can just, hey, man, take a vacation. Because,
look at their last two games. Deal went out 2 games ago in the middle of the game.
He's had a ridiculous amount of time, and
he didn't get sacked again, right? I mean, I know he went 51 again. Attempts the week before. I don't think he got sacked again. I mean, that's 2 weeks of him staying upright. You give him time. I agree with you, and I got to give some credit to Gilbride, but I thought it was key that they came down in that first drive, marched down the field, and scored. I love the fact that Waterworks Wilson still isn't seeing the field. And I believe
Wilson! God, I didn't mean Wilson!
I just wanted to score a touchdown. Now Andre Brown starting. So I love that he's just out, and that's just Tom Coughlin. Yeah. First round pick. Look, buddy, keep that helmet on. Squirt all you want under there, bud. We're going to have this dude, this journeyman guy nobody's ever heard of.
Who's been waived. I tweeted about this. The guy's been waived 6 times and released once. That is outrageous.
Yeah.
And basically my theory is that what happens is he gets released by the Giants. And everyone's kind of like, whatever. We didn't see enough of him to invest in him. And then I think that the pattern was every other team that kind of picked him up, he was like a one-week insurance thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. A guy that like maybe like Ryan Grant, who just signed with the Redskins. Someone to come in that they know can play at that level,
mm-hmm.
but just a body.
Right. Whether,
and yeah. I think that happened 6 times to him where, yeah. like, he goes to teams that have 2 or 3 running backs, and one of them goes down. They're like, crap, we need a guy to go in because we don't have a sturdy
a guy
pitcher like, back.
Yeah.
And so he comes in, and then the guy comes back healthy, and they're like, well, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Here you go. Here's your check.
Yeah.
And then you're on your way. Yeah, I mean, you see it in the NFL all the time. Owen and I talked about it last year at one point about running backs in this league, and I really think that there's so many. We were actually, the reason we talked about it was Tiki Barber. Oh, he thought he was going to come back and everybody's going to be banging, you know, like, oh, we can't wait to have Tiki Barber. And I'm like, there's a million guys. He's a 35-year-old running back. He's been in the league 4 years. There's a million guys out there that could run through a hole and hang on to the ball.
Is like
James Starks was O's example, and I know he's been hurt this year with turf toe, but he's a guy that could rush for 1,000 yards if you give him a chance.
Yeah, you give him the right line, you give him the right scheme, and all of these running backs are extremely talented. I mean, I know we kind of crap on a lot of them, but like they all have ridiculous speed and strength and size and agility. It's sometimes it's the luck of the draw, and that's what happened with Andre, and he's getting his chance now. And Bradshaw now has to be careful because I don't think he's definitely not going to get more touches. I don't think he's going to get more touches than Andre this week.
Right.
And I think it's going to be a split situation for the rest of the season.
I worry about it fantasy-wise. I picked up Andre Brown in my league and because I have Bradshaw. Obviously, had a big week for me. And now I have a feeling that now they're both going to be kind of worthless fantasy-wise because they're going to get 15 touches each. And they're going to be one of those, like, you know, Jonathan Stewart, D'Angelo Williams, where it's like, okay, they're both good. And they're both not getting a zero.
It seems like it's going to be down the stretch. It's going to be one's going to have a good game 1 week, and then another's going to have a good game the next week.
So who do I start? I mean, I'm going to start Brown this week just for the reasons you said. I think they're going to kind of ease him back in. Plus, I think the way to beat the Eagles is to run up the middle on them with that wide. Yeah. So I think that they're going to have to go up the gut, and they're going to want a bigger back. That's just my opinion on it, but.
But the big factor for me is that Black Unicorn, Martellus Bennett, is going to be the difference this year. And, you know, a lot of people were, like, laughing it off at the beginning of the year, but the guy is making a lot of plays that I honestly don't think Jake Ballard or Bear Pascoe would have made last year. Especially Jake Ballard.
Yeah, touchdown in all 3 games, right?
Touchdown in all 3 games. The first time in Giants franchise history, I think, that's happened. So, you know, I think Eli has established a rapport with him now. He knows that he runs good routes and he'll catch the ball and he's just got to put it in the vicinity and he's going to make plays.
And you think, like, when, you know, like they say the game slows down for a quarterback, you think when he looks down the field, all he sees is just a black unicorn streaking down the seam and you're like, well, there it is. And like, like little music starts playing. And they're like, well, I'm going to throw to that guy. He's a freaking black
unicorn.
Got a
rainbow coming out of his ass.
That guy's got a freaking rainbow. I mean, I don't know. I know. I like what you see out of Eli Manning. I mean, I still think some people are going a little overboard with Eli Manning. I mean, the day after that game, Mad Dog Russo's out there saying that Eli Manning is now leapfrogged ahead of Drew Brees. This was after 2 bad weeks of Drew Brees. I mean, the guy threw for 480 yards against the best defense in the league in the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
That's a little much. I was like, now you're a little much. And so I retweeted him, and he retweeted me, and then I got all these Giants fans all over me. Oh, yeah, because Joe, I was like, 6 quarters ago, this guy had thrown 3 picks that resulted in 21 points, and it went into the thing. And Joe Montana never threw an interception? So now he's Joe Montana. Now Eli Manning is Joe Montana. I mean, that's a little absurd. Right? The guy is a top 5 quarterback, but let's take it easy here with Joe Montana. The guy's very good, but
he just needs 2 more rings. That's fine.
That's it. I mean, I don't know how many times Joe Montana led the league in picks. Pretty sure never.
Yeah.
Especially in his prime, Eli did it twice. But he's a very good quarterback, and he's playing like I said, a lot of it does come back to him. I think that the idea, like you said, that everybody buys into it. It came to me, after they get rid of the Tiki Barber and the Shockey, and a lot of that core is still there, and they saw what wins. Did it win when you're that kind of guy, or is it win when you're Eli Manning kind of guy? And that's now spread throughout the locker room. And that has now become, and it started with Coughlin and his disciplinarianism at the beginning, and then it's you know, he's even softened a little bit, but it didn't matter. It was that you could see what wins, and the formula's there, and there's enough guys that have been through the program over the last 5 years that they see it. And it's like they're such a cohesive unit that I think that it works. So,
and what's crazy is they put up a graphic, I think on Thursday night, with Tom Coughlin compared side-by-side with Bill Parcells. People look at Bill Parcells like he's a god.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at his numbers with the Giants, and you look at Tom Coughlin's numbers with the Giants, and they are identical, if not Tom with a slight edge.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy...
It's been a long time since Bill Belichick's won a Super Bowl. People forget all about his time with the Browns, like it never existed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you look at what Tom Coughlin did with the Jaguars, an expansion team, and he did well with them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I agree with you. I mean, Tom Coughlin's clearly a Hall of Fame coach, great coach. We said it last year when people were calling for his head. I said, silly, who are you going to get? He's going to be better than Tom Coughlin.
But my heart definitely skipped a beat when Antral Roll went down.
Uh-huh.
And he kneed the camera in the face.
Yeah, did you stink that was a little? How did he get that hurt up from knee in the camera?
I don't know.
Camera?
Well, they don't wear pads.
No, yeah. I know, which is insane. The wide receivers just don't believe in pads.
It's nuts, yeah.
And the D-backs don't either, and it is amazing that they don't. But I thought he was dead.
I thought he was out for the season.
So,
I was like writing, well, that's the 2012 season.
I started typing up an article. I was up there on my typewriter, hacking away. But,
cigar, like,
it's the end. And that's the end, see? But, I just banged my knee on a camera.
I got a little bruised.
Stung a little bit. David Wilson's like, how come he didn't cry?
Yeah, man.
Oh, my God. He's a tough guy. He didn't even cry at all. Waterworks has got a new idol out there. You got to buddy up with Antrell. But so what do you think going into this game? I mean, we talked a little bit about the Eagles last week being 2-0, but a kind of a weak 2-0. Then they go out and get beaten up. And now people
I don't know what to think about that game, by the way.
Amazing.
Because the Cardinals... I don't know if they're for real. I don't know if the Eagles are
I mean, the Cardinals beat two good teams already.
Yeah.
Right? And the Cardinals beat the Pats.
Yeah.
Now they beat them. So, you know, everybody was laughing at them how bad they were going to be. But it was all because of their quarterback. I mean, they know they have the weapon. You know, they have one of the best wide receivers in the game. They got that young running back. You know, Beanie Wells is now on IR.
Ryan
but
Williams.
They got Ryan Williams, who's very good. They got speed on defense. Their front four has been great.
Yeah.
So, they could be kind of for real. So then you look at the Eagles and you say, well, what? Everybody was anointing the Eagles, not just the Eagles themselves, but they also were declaring themselves a dynasty. But, you know, they almost lose week one. They have to pull one out at the last minute. They win week two by a point again, and then they go out and get beaten up by the Cardinals, and, you know, everybody's down on the Eagles. Everybody. I mean, we're going to – there's only
– this is usually when they come out and put up a 42 spot.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
I know.
Usually what happens because – last year when they came into Giants Stadium, or MetLife Stadium, sorry, I was like, wow, the Giants might set a record for points scored because they had Vince Young at quarterback.
Yep.
They had a couple wideouts that are down. And I just thought there's no way that they can compete on a primetime level with the Giants amped to take control of the division. And the Giants got beat 17-10.
Yeah, I remember it well.
So, you know, I don't want to get too high on the Giants and I don't want to get too low on the Eagles because it's, you know, big-time rival game. And, you know, the fact that it's in Philly, you can't underestimate that.
This talk of Michael Vick going to the bench and, you know, Andy Reid was kind of vague about it.
Kafka or whatever his
name is? Yeah, well, they have that guy Foles, this rookie Foles,
oh,
who had a great
yeah.
preseason. Yeah, remember how good Kevin Cobb was in his preseason outings with the Eagles. But to me, I mean, granted, he's got a ridiculous amount of turnovers. He's got 11 turnovers in three games, which is insane. But to me, if the Eagles are going to go place is going to be with their explosiveness, and that comes from Michael Vick. So, and he was able to lead them down in week one to that winning drive.
It's just a turnover thing. It's not.
That's all
it's
it
not
is.
Like he's making that. It's not like he's making horrendous reads, or he doesn't understand the offense, or he's not can't deal with the speed of the game.
No.
He's fumbling the ball.
He's
coughing it up. He's turning it over. And I think if you cut back on those, you know, they have a shot.
I agree with you. Now, the spread, I know it opened at 2.5. The Giants were getting 2.5, which everybody was surprised at. How the hell are the Giants getting points against the Eagles? How bad they looked, even though they're both 2-1. This is the type of game where the Eagles can explode, where you're going to see Michael Vick making plays, and you see Shady McCoy making plays, and all their other playmakers on offense. And so I agree. I think that this is – it's not like a trap game in the traditional sense of a trap game, but I think that it's just not that you would ever look past the Eagles, but I think a lot of Giants fans almost are, and I don't, it doesn't sound like you are, but the Giants fans that I'm talking, that I'm hearing from, everybody was so thrilled right on Facebook about how bad the Eagles did.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Eagles stink and Michael Vick stinks and all this. I think it has the makings of it's not going to be – I mean, it's 2.5-point spread in the Eagles' favor for a reason.
Yeah.
It means that the Vegas still believes, even after what
and
they've seen.
And plus, DeSean Jackson, it's like he lives for these games against the Giants. Mm-hmm. And that's when he always he does – he excels and plays well. And also, Brent Celek also has a fairly decent history against the Giants too. So those are the two guys that I'm looking out for. And then you always have the threat of McCoy just thrashing that defense because they're as good as they looked – And they have played, in my opinion, outside of the fact that they got burned a couple times on defense against the Bucs in the passing game, they've actually played very well, considering all the injuries that they've had. You know, Mukamura looks like he's turned things around, I guess.
Right.
You know, you have Hosley, who's a young guy, a rookie, who seems like he brings something to the table. So,
yeah, what I worry about is, you know, still the strength of that team is their passers, even though they're down linemen haven't gotten a ton of sacks. Still, that's the pressure on the quarterback, but you could neutralize that in a couple ways. Clearly, screens, which they're going to use.
Andy Reid loves the throw.
Which, yeah, that's his go-to play there. And just a quarterback that's able to avoid the rush. And so they have both of those things. So it's not a good matchup. I think that's one of the reasons why the Eagles have had some success, even during this little dynasty that the Giants have had. The Eagles have had some success. I got a bad feeling about the Giants this week. And, I said that last week. Some sort of Giants fans are thrilled to hear that, but... and I don't think it's the end of the world if they lose, you know, and then, everybody's going to make a big deal about them possibly being 0-2 in their division, which is a big deal.
Yeah, yeah.
But they're going to get to play them again. They're going to play both those teams again. So, I don't know. I have a bad feeling about this game, more so because of how the Eagles are just being written off by everybody,
And the Giants typically stink on primetime, too. I mean,
this is their third primetime game in 4 weeks. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's another primetime game. Who knows? I think it'll be obviously an exciting game. I don't think it's going to be a blowout either way, but I don't think anybody expected a blowout last week.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Now we're going to get to the New York Jets. Has there ever been, other than possibly the Eagles, a team that is 2-1, first place in a division, and a fan base that hates this team? It is amazing. You listen to Jet fans, and this is just a call in. I mean, people that I talk to, good friends of mine, season ticket holders I talk to. They're 2-1. They're in first place. The only game they lost, I mean, granted, it looked very bad, but they lost to the Steelers in Pittsburgh where they never win. And they're coming out there and say, like, they're like, they might as well be 0-3. And this is just going into a season where everybody was talking about 4 wins.
Yeah.
They have not looked good, but they won.
Yeah.
At least be excited for 2 days and then say, well, let's look at what's going on. It was immediate after the game. The Jets are the worst team ever assembled. They're 2-1 in first place. They control their own destiny.
I think it's just so hard to watch. Like,
they're brutal.
Playing, like, people, it's just so hard to watch.
I told Tony this in the car. I decided to stay home and not go to the bar. Might be the biggest mistake of my life. It would have been the biggest mistake to go as well because I would have called out of work. But at least at the bar, I get to watch other games. I don't have the Red Zone. I don't have DirecTV. So all I get is the New York Jets
CBS
at 1 o'clock. And that is it.
Yeah.
That is my day for 3 hours.
Hey, what is the story with them not having a game on Fox when one of the, it's like, that's it. You get one game.
I get one game and
you get
the
an
Jets.
Infomercial on Fox.
And I'm watching the Jets and I get zero updates on any other. It's like the New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins are the only teams playing in the history of the
it's
NFL.
The Super Bowl. Yeah.
That's it. They're the only teams playing. So I'm sitting there and I'm just trying to endure and get through it. And, my takeaway is this. Like, as much – the Jets definitely could have lost that game, obviously, if it hadn't been for Dan Carpenter and for icing. And the thing that I noticed is that there are so many ways you can interpret it. Dolphins lost to the Raiders last week. Raiders come back and beat the Steelers this week. Steelers beat the Jets. I don't know that you can get too high or too low. You got to have that even keel, and I think a lot of coaches preach this about how you look. A W is a W is a W. When you at the end of the year in December or January, whenever you're looking back at the season, you say, "Oh yeah, we beat the Dolphins. That's a W."
Yeah.
Regardless of how it went down. So I think for the Jets, it's just the mentality of. I mean, one thing you have to be encouraged by is Antonio Holmes.
Yeah, last week we had
a pretty monster game, at least for me in fantasy.
He did. He had a good game yardage wise. You know, he made plays when they needed. He actually got some separation. He was open.
Right.
Sanchez missed him a couple of times. He dropped the pass. But I agree with you. And you look
but those are the numbers you're looking for out of him every week, or at least something close to it.
You need 80 yards from him, six catches. You do. You're going to need that. I mean, because they have nothing else, no other weapons. I mean, you saw Stephen Hill drop a pass again in the end zone. But, you know, I'll go back to what you were saying about the Dolphins, you know, beating the crap out of the Raiders and looking like world beaters, and then the Jets fans and other fans are downplaying their win against the Bills because you're supposed to beat the Bills, and then you look at the Bills and they're 2-1 now, and they've gone out and look great.
Fitzpatrick's thrown like 5 or 6 touchdowns. He's looking pretty good. So
there aren't any gimme wins in the NFL.
Exactly.
There aren't any.
Exactly.
I don't care what you say.
Right.
Especially going into Miami. Miami has not been good for a few years. Rex Ryan's record going into that game was 2-4 against Miami.
Yeah.
And the Jets have been good. You know, the Jets are well over 500.
Patriots even struggle down in Miami most of the time.
Exactly. which is weird because they don't get any fans down there.
Right.
But for whatever reason, I mean, growing up, the rivalry was Jets-Miami. And still, even though I hate the Patriots to death, in the back of my mind, if you were to ask me quick, off the cuff, who's your least favorite NFL team, I'm going to say the Dolphins.
Yeah.
Just because that's how I was brought up. Yeah, it's a big game to beat the Dolphins, and they beat them, and they did it ugly. But I think that says something. They used to win those games. When they were going to back-to-back AFC Championship games, they won so many ugly games. In Sanchez's second year, he led the league in fourth quarter comebacks, and it was him playing horribly for the first half and then putting it together for a drive. And you look at what he did and how bad they looked in the first half offensively, just completely anemic. He had something like 75 yards at the half. He was, you know, 40% completion. He goes out, puts up over 200 yards from halftime on, right? He goes out, gets up over 300 yards, does it when, you know, he gets a big play to Curley. He had the big play to Santonio Holmes in overtime down the sideline, which put him in field goal range, which makes me, I mean, there was part of me, even though I'm a Sanchez believer, after how it looked like he had maybe given up is the wrong term, but he had just lost all confidence week two after he took that bad hit and his numbers went down. And he was just lost in the second half of that Steelers game. He didn't do that. He was as bad as he was. And I like to make excuses for him. He did get drop passes, and Stephen Hill's never open. Even when he is, he drops the ball, and the rest of them all stink. The first interception wasn't his fault. He did look bad. He missed a lot of guys. He still gets a little jittery, holds onto the ball at times too long, do a terrible interception. But he battled back, and he didn't, you know, okay, got the ball back and they were able to score. Gets the big play to Curley and they're able to score. So there are definite positives to this game. And it's like you're just forgetting all about that.
Yeah, and say what you will about Tebow's performance, but it's just good to see that he's in the game. They're working him into the system, and I think they need to do more of it. Did he make that much of an impact? The fourth down punt conversion was pretty big.
Probably the biggest play of the game.
Probably big, and you know, so he took a ball off the helmet.
Yeah,
but you know,
swivel on those 5 yard outs, man.
Yeah,
I mean, looking around.
No, you know, but that's something that'll come with more and more playing time as he gets accustomed to the position and whatnot. And you know, they didn't do a lot of that in the preseason. It was either Sanchez is in or Tebow's in.
Yeah,
they had them both in. So the fact that they need to just get him more reps at, you know, the halfback or tight end or split or, you know, whatever, just getting him in the game, getting him in the flow of the game, and they were making comments on Sunday. He was open.
Oh, yeah, he was open.
It's just that he's not the primary look.
He's going to be, right. And I don't even think he was any look early on. It was just for distraction. And then now that they threw to him, even though they hit him in the head, at least now they got to keep him honest. And
exactly.
I will tell you, having played quarterback in high school, and there was a time where I was working on a wide receiver as well. We had a really good backup quarterback who the year after me wound up going to the state playoffs and everything. He was a junior, and there was a blowout game, and I'd worked on, you know, some times I'd play wide receiver, and I got in the game. Late in the game, we're down like 30 points, and they put me in the game. And to be in a game, to be in practice is one thing. I caught every ball thrown to me.
Yeah.
And the guy looked at me, and he's like, friend of the show, Tommy Student. He's like, I'm going to throw it to you no matter what.
Yeah.
I said, okay. So I was running a slant. The game, and this is high school. It just moves so fast. It's like, if you've never done it, you've never caught a pass.
Right.
You know, he threw it at my feet, and I just got leveled because I was a quarterback out there. And then they never played another snap at wide receiver. But it was just weird, you know. And so I saw how it got hit in the head. It's just like you can't – there's nothing you can do in 7-on-7 drills or drills in practice against your own defense that's going to replicate it. Because I'm sure in practice he's not getting hit even when he's out there. He still basically got the red jersey on, even though he's out there split out as a H-back or whatever.
And, you know, there was one series or play in the Packers-Seahawks game that I think that the Jets should take note of.
Yeah.
They were saying that Rodgers and the Packers O-line, they have a clock in practice.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a horn that goes mm-hmm. off at, like, 2.6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not even 3 seconds, like 2.6 seconds.
Yeah.
And in that 2.6 seconds, there should be a play.
Yep.
You should be making a play.
Yep.
So if Rodgers drops back and within 2.6 seconds he doesn't see something, he's going to now move in the pocket or scramble and try and look for something.
Yep.
And I think that's what the Jets need to start to do because the one knock on Sanchez, and I saw it on Sunday, it's the fact that just get through your progression. Get through your progression and then you slide and have a little more pocket awareness, have a little more presence.
Yeah, we talked about it last week.
And Tebow's the other way. Tebow's the complete opposite.
Yeah,
it's like he'll do one read, maybe two, and then he's gone.
He's up to the mid. I completely agree with you. He is mobile. He is good, but it's like – it's only after everything has broken down, and and somehow that first initial rush has gotten by him. He's quick. I mean, I'm sure speed-wise, he's not that much slower than Tebow, but he doesn't have that clock, and he doesn't have that, which is scary to say that you've been in the league and how many starts has he had. I mean, but you got to go back and say, you know, how many games he started 13 games at USC, and at USC he had five offensive linemen that were all NFL players, and he never got hit. So,
and part of the problem might be, you know, you're talking about the Packers O-line versus the Jets O-line. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? The Packers O-line, they create passing lanes. I don't know that the Jets offensive line really gives him that neat little pocket in the passing lanes.
To me, and it's a good segue, that's why you're the segue guy, but we're going to segue over to the offensive line because to me that's their biggest problem. And, you know, more so in their running game because they have three Pro Bowl linemen. I mean, they have Mangold, who's a multiple Pro Bowler, DeBrickashaw Ferguson, who's a multiple Pro Bowler, and they have Brandon Moore, who's a very good player. And you're saying, okay, they have a guy who's never played before playing right tackle, and they have Slauson, Dukas, Mix over there at the other the other guard position. So you say, well, they should be so much better than they are. And as much as I don't think Sean Green's an every down back, and although he averaged 4 yards a carry last year, he has no 20-yard gains this year. You know, he's averaging 2.1 yards a carry, and I know Bilal Powell's showing some things. It's not like you look at plays and you say, man, look at the hole there. And he's not the type of guy who's going to be able to be a DeMarco Murray or even a Matt Bradshaw or one of those guys who could, you know, everything could break down and he can make a play out of something.
Yeah, and it also makes you wonder why they never made an effort. Did they make an effort for Ryan Grant? Did they even give him a look?
No.
I mean, I know Grant's been injury prone, but he's looked good. The Giants never played him that much because they had Tiki Barber, Brandon Jacobs, and he just couldn't find his way into the mix.
Yeah.
And when he would get hurt. So, and then when he's with the Packers,
I think he led the league in rushing one year. He was up there and then he led the NFC. I mean,
obviously he's not going to come in and be your feature back, but he's a guy that can give you, he has a different running style from Sean Green and Bilal Powell that might play better with that offensive line. So,
it's weird that they didn't even work out Cedric Benson in the offseason. You know what I mean? Like, it's like these are the backs we got. We're committed to it. And I go back to Rex Ryan and Tannenbaum, where they are so confident and cocky in themselves.
Yeah.
That these are the guys we brought in. We brought in Sean Green. We brought in Bilal Powell. We brought in Joe McKnight. And we're going to make them work.
Right.
We're going to make it work.
I commend them for having that confidence. But at the same time, don't be dumb about it. Don't be ignorant. At least just
from everything I've heard, they didn't even work out Ryan Grant, which is silly.
Just keep an open mind. You know, that's the thing about, and, you know, people hate Belichick, but Belichick is willing to consider anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's a quarterback on the market, he'll bring him in because maybe he can convert him to a wide receiver.
Something. He'll figure him out.
Yeah.
And he's done it. Troy Brown playing corner and everything. You know, Edelman playing corner. He figures it out. Let me just work him out and figure it out. You know, they worked out Kellen Winslow, three, 4 weeks ago when he was first cut by the Seahawks, and then he didn't work out, and then they wanted to bring him back when they had an injury. So it's like, that's what they do, and the Jets don't seem to do. They're hard-headed in their ways that this is what we got. I have enough to win. And I think it's Rex's cockiness and it's his confidence in himself that he could take anybody and mold them. And I do think that. And I'll go by to the day I die, and that's the reason why they brought Tim Tebow in. They brought him in because they said, you give me a talented guy, and I'll make him. And I will revolutionize the sport of football.
Right.
And that's just their mentality. And I think it is one of the reasons why Rex is a very good coach. But it is also one of his down. You know, it's a strength and a weakness of his. So, you know, we haven't mentioned it, but the biggest thing is the Revis injury at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a non-contact injury. Clearly, it's, you know, he's out for the year. It's a devastating blow. You couldn't. I don't know that you could look at another team and say a non-quarterback would have that kind of impact.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can. Maybe Andre Johnson is always hurt, and the Texans were able to overcome that. Maybe Megatron. I don't know.
Every Jet fan that I saw online, Facebook, Twitter, whatever, it was like season over.
Yeah.
Season over. It's one dude.
Yeah. I know. It's an indictment on Kyle Wilson. I said today he didn't even give any interviews because he thinks the media is against him. He's not against you. Everybody loved when they drafted him. They're like, well, because they hyped him up so much. This guy was going to be another lockdown corner. He just isn't.
Yeah.
He seems to be worse in the nickel package, though. I think he has a lot more problems covering the slot receiver than does the outside receiver. So it almost is a little bit better. I think he's – not that he's going to be anywhere near Revis, but I think he's a better corner on the outside than he is in the slot. But it's a huge blow. And now the question is, you know, what they're not getting to the quarterback at all. So the question is, well, are they going to be able to blitz as much as they're accustomed to without that? I think they got to blitz more.
Yeah.
Because the more time that this quarterback has, the less chance Kyle Wilson.
Wait, you're going to play a soft zone and let him pick you apart the entire game?
Exactly. I think you got to sit there and say, look, we're going to just get after him.
Yeah,
we're gonna...
just, you know, say, hey, Kyle, step it up.
Kyle can make plays on the ball. Yeah. We saw it in week one. It wasn't a great pass by Fitzpatrick, but he broke on the ball on a slant route or on a crossing pattern. He was able to make a good play on the ball. So he is a guy that can make plays, and I think that that's the type of defense they're going to have to be. They're going to have to be the defense like the Saints when they won the Super Bowl or like the Packers a couple years ago. That they're going to give up big plays, but I think that they can't sit there and let quarterbacks pick them apart. They've got to either be big-time plays. You look at the two Jets wins that came on big plays by the defense, the three picks. Clearly the pick by Landry last week, although it was a gift, was the difference in the game. I mean, the play of the game, if you were going to pick one play. So that's what they're going to have to be. They're going to be one of those type of defenses that they're going to need to get big play. They're going to give up big plays, but they're going to make big plays. And I think that they got to play more aggressively than they would have, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Francesa thought the exact opposite. How could you do that? You can't do that. I completely disagree with him there. You've got to be more aggressive.
Yeah.
And be willing to give up the big play, and just that's how they have to play this season.
But, I mean, you, at the same time, you don't want to put them on an island. I think you got to give them a little help.
Well, they got two very good safeties.
Yeah.
I think Jeremiah Bell hasn't been as good as I thought he would be, but I think Landry's been a better cover safety than I thought he would be. I mean, I know he's a big hitter. I was worried he was going to be like a Roy Williams for the Cowboys, where he, you know, comes up with a big hit, but gets burnt all the time. He's actually played a very good cover safety.
Yeah.
So that's what you got to do. You know what I mean? And you know, now they're, like I said earlier, they're working out Joe McKnight a little bit at corner. Maybe he'll play some out of the Bill Belichick. I mean, they do say he's one of the best athletes on the field, and he is. And he's clearly a ridiculous athlete. And he was the number one running back recruit coming out of high school because of athleticism. He's a small guy. He didn't have the USC career everybody thought he would. He clearly hasn't any kind of really NFL career, but he's athletic enough. You see him on kick returns. He led the league in kick returns last year. So you hope that he could make plays. You know, I don't know. I have no idea. Nobody does. Not even Rex Ryan knows what kind of athlete he could be, but you put an athlete out there, I think that that's what they have to do. They got to somehow figure out a way to get to the quarterback. Copels is non-existent at all. I mean, I actually sat and just specifically watched him.
I saw him in the stands at one point ordering a beer.
Mm. He might as well. I think I was sitting next to him on the couch at one point. I turned over, hey, Quentin, what's up, brother?
Dude, I think you are on the field now.
Dude, yeah, you got to get in there. It's third down. You got to get in there. Pass rushing situation there, buddy. But he's non-existent, and I knew that. And the guy I wanted so much was John Bones Jones' brother, Chandler Jones. Of course he went to the Patriots, and of course he's very good. Of course he's very good. He went the 30th pick or whatever and just passed up on him to get Copels, of course. I mean, and that was the guy, when we did our thing, what do you want the Jets to get? I said, I want this guy, just, you know, he comes from that pedigree, he can make plays, and of course he's good, and of course the guy that just drafted is bad. I mean, there's no question that that was going to be the case.
I mean, maybe they make a call to John Bone Jones now.
Yes.
You know, be like, you won, take some time off, come play some football.
Come play some football. You wrestled a little bit in college.
Yeah.
Let's get after it, brother. Now, this week they got a very tall task. Again, it's a weird spread. 2.5 points for the Niners. I mean, it's gone up, but that's what it opened at. It's gone up after the Revis. I think it's up to 4. But still, I mean, you look at the
and
the
this
Niners.
Is what we're talking about with the parity and
yeah.
just the unpredictability. Unpredictability.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's crowning the Niners, saying they're going to go undefeated, number one seed, Super Bowl, participant, and they lose to the Vikings. Who
lose to the Vikings? And they get run out on the Vikings. This is the best rush defense. One of the best rush defenses ever. Last year they put up ridiculous numbers in the first 2 weeks of this year, and the Vikings got run 140 yards on them or whatever it was.
And Ponder looked good. You know, they're using his legs to score. So
yeah. So there is potential there. It just and the Jets have the advantage. You always look at a West Coast team coming east, playing the early game. You know, those things always come into play. And I know the Niners, they actually didn't even go back to California. They just stayed and they went down to Youngstown, Ohio, or whatever, and that's where they stayed for the week for practice and all to eliminate the jet lag problem. But I don't know. I have a bad feeling about this game. But like I said from the beginning of the season, I expect them to start out 2-3. Their schedule does get very easy. I mean, they got the Colts, so they should be at home. They still got, you know, the Dolphins again and the Bills again, and they got winnable games. They can get to 7 or 8 wins just on winning the games that they're favored in, even without Ravens. So they got to steal a game or two somewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be an ugly game. I think it's going to be close, but I do think that the 49ers will pull away from the end. But I will think for about 2.5 quarters, you're going to see some closely contested football. There's going to be a lot of field goals.
I don't think the difference in the game will get above 10 points. I think it'll be similar to the game you watched last week, to be honest with you. I mean, the Dolphins have a very good defense. It's not sugarcoated. They were very good in the first 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be one of those games where you're just like, 3 and out from the Jets. And, they get a first down and then punt and they do this. And and it's going to be one of those type of games. And, we're down 13-3 at the half. And it's like, but I don't think they're ever going to be able to bounce back. But I don't think it's going to be a 41-10 or anything like that. But I think it'll be a loss. And I think that the problem is what's going to happen is they got two tough games. And then they follow up with a Monday night game against the Texans who are rolling. And I think that is the problem. The Jet fans are going to just say, see, I told you, Revis is out, the season's over.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with it. To me, they come out of this, the first 5 games, 2-3. They won the 2 games they needed to win. And they did that. They didn't do it pretty last week, but they did it. So let's not give up on the season. Do I think that they're going to win 10, 11 games? No, but I'm as optimistic as I can be as a Jet fan at this point, you know? You ready for days?
Yeah.
Why don't you kick us off with some days? I'm gonna freshen us up here. All right, you're gonna take over the mic. I'm gonna turn it over to you.
All right.
You just start spitting out some due to you serious stuff. It's just slowly becoming an internet sensation.
Yeah, it's picking up a lot of buzz on the blog.
It really is. I mean, more so than the NFL refs. It was trending ahead of NFL refs and Golden Tate.
So you might think that we're being overly optimistic with the Jets this week. You might hear someone say, "Dude, are you serious?" with those kind of predictions, but there's some other stories out there that might make you question, dude, are you serious? For one, the Museum of Sex. I don't know. Have you guys ever visited?
Yeah.
There's a Groupon special right now. Of course you've heard of it. You've never heard of it. Yeah. they got a bronze, mold of, you got a mold of his bulge. Museum of Sex has offered Timothy Tebow a lifetime membership.
In the abstinence wing?
I mean, yeah, this is what happens when you don't have sex. You specialize in MMA and you pray to God, and then you ask random girls who take pictures of you on Twitter to take it down.
Yeah.
But I've never been to the Museum of Sex, and if you're Tim Tebow, you got to be a little curious, right? I mean, you've never seen a naked woman. You never kissed a woman. I mean, you know, at some point you got to open the book, Tim, right? You got to take a look.
He's never kissed a woman?
He's never kissed a girl? I'm completely making this up at this point. I mean, but, I mean, if I'm Tim Tebow, maybe it's the sex part that's getting him. I mean, because if it was the Museum of Married Sex, maybe, like, he'd be all about it, but I think it's just that there's...
Sex is a gift, Neil.
It's a gift from God. And you think Tebow would realize that. So, I mean, if I'm Tim, I mean, if you're not going to take it. I'll dress up as you.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean...
Go check it out, Tim.
Just give it a look.
It's worth it.
I mean, you're not going to convert to, like, Satanism for one visit. It's not like, oh, well, I just saw a boob. I'm now the devil.
Happened to Josh Hamilton.
Yeah.
Josh was Bible.
He's not... And Hamilton's not even allowed to have energy drinks now.
Wow.
The list of stuff that he can't do is so long. It's like, screw my multi-million-dollar contract. I want to live.
Yeah.
He's apparently going blind from energy drinks. Did you hear about that?
What?
He's going blind from energy drinks and caffeine because he needs something in his body to stimulate him because he can't have the heroin and he can't have the meth or whatever the hell he was doing. He can't have the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, so he's got to do friggin' Red Bull 24/7.
It's a gateway drug, that Red Bull.
Yeah.
They always say that.
Yeah.
Remember that from health class. All right, what else you got?
We got Charles Barkley, and this might be a say what. I kind of stole this from Tony, I think. But Charles Barkley on Tiger Woods, I wish I could put some of my blackness in him. And then I just segued from the Museum of Sex, so I understand where.
No, but I'm sure Charles Barkley. This museum is like Charles Barkley.
Yeah, yeah.
Say what?
He
Charles
is a lifetime member.
Charles Barkley's got some say
He's
what.
He's probably calling up people like, hey, man, check it out. It's not terrible. All right, we got the first spill. We got the first spit up.
It actually went into my face. I got bourbon in my eye on that one.
Yeah, so earlier this week, this is from the Big Lead Sports. Earlier this week, Greg Norman said that Tiger Woods was intimidated by the number one golfer in the world, Rory McIlroy. Tiger's response was to joke about it, but his old friend Charles Barkley said, I would like for him to just blast Greg Norman. That situation gave everybody a chance to dump on you, and Tiger still tried to take the high road. I'm not a high road guy. I want him to come out and really blast Greg Norman.
So he's basically saying that it's no black person could ever take the high road? That's a pretty horrible thing to say.
Yeah.
That's a horrible thing to say.
He's basically saying all black people should go ballistic.
Yeah. Wait a minute, Charles. Way to take a step forward for social causes. What an idiot. I love him. But, man, he don't think. He just says stuff. Like, which is
and what, people still love him.
Of course. He's the most lovable guy on television. But he could just say something like that, and he's like, oh, Chuck.
He's actually advocating that Tiger Woods go up and punch Greg Norman in the face.
Greg Norman. 75-year-old man.
Yeah.
Nice enough guy.
I mean, I know they call him the shark, but I don't think he's going to...
No. I think you could take Craig Norman down.
Yeah. Here's another story from Big Lead Sports. You've heard it. We've made reference to the Lingerie Football League. Several references. A lot of people thought it was a joke when it first started. It's now expanding internationally.
Yeah.
They're going Canada, Australia, what have you.
I've actually heard the football isn't bad. Like, these girls know how to play football. I've never watched
it. Did you see the video?
It is entertaining.
You think the receivers in the NFL don't wear any pads?
Wow.
The only pad they're wearing is...
comes once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It's very entertaining to watch.
The one girl got trucked.
Yeah, she can't. I'm telling you.
The one girl got trucked.
Yeah?
Yeah. And she got up and just dusted herself off and was like, all right, did anyone see my bra?
I lost something.
Yeah. Anyway, so someone out there had the brilliant idea. They saw that, and like all good ideas, they tried to capitalize on it. And now there's a bikini hockey league.
Wow. See, that could be all right, though. That could be all right, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see how that could possibly go wrong.
You know, I have a friend of mine who listens to the show. He might be listening now. Who he works at Quinnipiac, which has a great women's hockey team, like one of the best in the country. And he said that the hottest girls at Quinnipiac are on the hockey team. So there's clearly like a talent pool for it. You know, I don't know. We didn't have girls hockey.
No,
but
I'm willing to admit they're willing to do some pretty awesome stuff. Behind closed doors.
The women hockey players?
Yeah.
I would guess. They party.
I mean, you're not going to like take a couple hip checks on the ice and then come down and say, I don't want to do that.
Hockey
they're not saying no. I'm just saying they're not going to say no.
Remember the bar tab that the Bruins put up? It was like,
I might have to say no.
Yeah,
you're like, no.
No, dude. I'm still trying to get my bust in the Sex Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
I can't do it this way. Not this way, ladies. I like it. I think we can cover it.
And especially with the NHL lockout, the work stoppage, I think that, you know, NBC Sports puts this up.
Guys need the hockey fans need their hockey.
Yeah.
It's a rabid fan base.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, who's this? I mean, it's...
They had a media day? That's what's up on your screen.
A media day, yeah. Can you imagine being part of that media day?
Imagine just being one of the guys behind the scenes, like you're the boom guy holding up the mic. All right. Bikini Hockey League media day. Take one. For action.
And you know there's got to be some personality out there that's just a quote machine.
JT. You tell me. JT should be the face
of bikini hockey.
Of bikini hockey. James, please. That's your calling. Guys, Connecticut School of Broadcasting, he used to do his 2020 updates, and he was fantastic. You know that.
Yeah.
He's a ridiculously gorgeous man. with the Captain Jack mustache. I mean, guy's fantastic looking.
Yeah.
Great jawline. Get him in that. Get him involved in that. He would dominate that media day.
He would bring down that league in a week.
Wow.
And that's a good thing. I mean,
yeah.
I'm saying the bikini players got to watch out for
They'd
JT.
They'd be like,
JT's
well, the Baltimore team had to fold because they're all pregnant.
Yeah.
With JT children.
JT's got a whole hockey team of his own.
No, he's a stand-up guy, though. He wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Okay, what else you got?
Wrap it up, JT. The New York Knickerbockers.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it seems like all the attention is going to the Brooklyn Nets.
And it should.
For all the right reasons.
100%.
They got that new subway stop opening up. They got the new center opening up.
Mm-hmm.
They just revealed the uniforms. They just revealed the new dancers that apparently look like the Fly Girls from In Living Color.
Nice.
Yep.
Which I love, personally.
Who doesn't love it?
You talk about discovering myself.
Yeah, that was...
In the late 80s, early 90s.
That was, yeah, 6th to maybe 9th grade.
J-Lo was a Fly Girl.
And she was the ugliest Fly Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a girl they stuck in the back.
Yeah.
She was the bottom of the pyramid.
All right, just keep your fat rump in the back row,
J-Lo. America was not ready for that in 89.
No.
All right, so what happened?
So the New York Knickerbockers, they continue to make some moves, or they're trying to make some moves.
Fine. They go through the waiver wire. Who's the oldest guy? We want him.
And it's Rasheed Wallace. They want to sign Rasheed Wallace.
So he retired.
They want to bring him out of retirement.
Well, why wouldn't they?
They're saying, along with Willis Reed.
Yeah. You're saying like there's a youth movement in most sports.
Yeah.
Say, whoa. Rex Ryan's reinventing football. We're going to reinvent basketball. We want extremely old guys that haven't been good in a while. Give me back Ringworm Wallace. I want him. Let's do it.
So, and this is from Barstool, and I think this is KFC, right? Yeah? Even if it isn't. He goes,
I love Rasheed Wallace.
A guy unretiring to play for them would only be their 4th oldest player.
No way, it's
yeah.
true.
That's the status of the New York Knickerbockers.
I love it.
So, I feel like they were at an all-time high for like over a decade. During the insanity, you'd say, like, late January, early February, people were like, wow, it's the playoff team. They could actually do something. To now, they're trying to woo Rasheed Wallace out of retirement.
They got their old team working on it. Everybody's making calls.
They're like, we have a great adult diaper package.
Look, we got a good dental plan. We got it all. We'll get you one of those scooters.
We won't play the music too loud in the arena.
Yeah. When we do, it's very soothing. I'm coming home. It's very soothing, Rasheed.
So a couple weeks back, we talked about an offensive lineman for a semi-pro football team who's 500.
Yeah.
You know, he's a little on the light side. Now we got a kid who's in 8th grade.
Mm-hmm.
6'7", 225. You're looking at a picture of him.
Look at
and
him.
You are frightened.
Look at him.
Picture that kid who's 4 foot nothing, wow. 90 pounds.
That's Icebox right there. And that little kid's going, pitch to Johnny. I'm Johnny.
They can't be letting that guy play football.
Yeah, what kind of... That ain't top water. Step on the scales before you play.
Wow.
Wow.
The kid's up to his waist. Go up a little bit.
And he's playing linebacker, too, which means...
It looks Photoshopped.
It,
everyone
it is.
Photoshopped. It looks
We're
going to
post this on our website.
Wow.
That's a Photoshop picture, but even if it is, it's great. But... The kid's playing linebacker. I mean, he's got to be a decent athlete. It's not like he's playing down lineman, right? He's got to be able to move a little bit.
So the kid his name is Isaiah Stokes. His big brother is Tennessee power forward Jarnell Stokes.
Mm-hmm.
Jarnell's 6'8", 270.
Mm-hmm.
So this kid's only an inch off and about 50 pounds lighter. And he's, you know, he's just getting eighth grade.
He's currently terrifying kids on the football field. This is great.
And the comment on the Barstool is, what you're seeing is the exact moment this little white kid quit football and signed up for the soccer team.
He is making a beeline for the sideline. You can see the sideline. He's staring straight at the sideline going, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, and we call this and even if this kid can't play football, just put him on the sideline for intimidation factor.
Yeah, imagine that. Just send him out for the coin toss.
Yeah, I was going to say, send him out for the coin toss.
And we win. Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Oh, boy.
Last but not least, this is probably the most depressing story. It's not like, are you serious in that it's weird? It is weird. I mean, you don't see this often, but it's more of a Neil Lynch, are you serious with your life, with what you've done, all your regrets? This story just compounds all that.
Yeah.
Last week we were talking about the guy who ran for 10 touchdowns, 690 yards in the game. This Texas high school quarterback sees him and he's like, I raise you. I'm going to throw for a state record, 715 yards in a win. Hope, I mean, if it's not in a win, then you need to, I think you need to reevaluate your program.
115 yards.
He missed my career season by about 60, 70 yards. This guy did it in one game.
Do you think this guy's going to play somewhere on Saturdays in a couple years?
This kid is going to be a trick shot quarterback at some D2 school.
This kid's got Appalachian State written all over him. Trying to upset Michigan somewhere.
Who was that Florida quarterback that everyone was so high on coming out of high school? Brock? What was his name? Remember it was like back in the day? This kid reminds me of that kid. Went to Florida and he's like set all kinds of high school state records. He comes into Florida and Steve Spurrier just literally like just plopped one in his mouth.
Yeah, nope, not here, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, God bless this kid.
But a Texas state record, that's legit.
Yeah, Texas has produced some decent high school. High school football in Texas is pretty big. Yeah. A little bit bigger than Fairfield County, Connecticut, I think. I don't know.
A little bit.
And the guy who was playing against them, see, this is where is the defense in high school football?
Yeah.
Where is it?
I guess it's not in Texas.
The other kid threw for 595 yards.
What was the score?
I mean,
so
it was infinity to infinity.
1,200 yards between them.
They're still playing the game, apparently, because it's like, you know. They
can't end this.
They stopped the clock on first downs. And
yeah. Wow. 1,200-yard day through the air. Imagine throwing for 595 and losing. That should be a story. That's got to be the most yards in a loss ever. 595 yards.
Well, it's the fourth all-time mark. They just said it's for fourth place.
Brock Berlin. That's Berlin. There you go.
F that guy, man. I had to hear all about that guy. Going to be the next friggin'.
His Wikipedia page, it ends at, he went to University of Florida.
Yep, that's it.
His early years are like 14 pages long. And then it's in Florida. I saw three snaps.
They go over his like high school girlfriends. Like, yeah. He's going steady junior year with Brittany. And then,
he did. He was the class president. And yeah. How'd that turn out, Brock? Brock now is substitute teacher.
Brock should have probably done some more of the whippets, like Rexy, sexy Rexy.
Yeah.
That'll get you through a collegiate career.
That'll get you through it, is right. That's a great day. Is that all you got for Days?
That is all I got.
I love it. As always, love the Days. We're going to jump right into the next best and the original.
The original.
The OG of segments on this show. Say what? Can we get a little Samuel L? Or is that still on our thing?
I think we got it somewhere.
Let's get a little Samuel L.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker.
I love it. Every time he gets a little closer to saying it, he extends it.
And every time I want to have a Kahuna Burger in my hand. I want a Kahuna Burger, and I can never have it.
Never. All right, dude, what do we got?
What do you think? This is Bill Belichick on grabbing. You see him grab that official after the game? So it says, it was inappropriate for me to contact the official. I take responsibility for what happened. I accept the discipline, and I apologize for the incident Sunday night in Baltimore. 50,000.
He should have been suspended again.
You think so?
He grabbed him. Maybe talk me off the ledge here because I hate him.
Yeah, get off the ledge, dude.
Are you serious? Dude, he grabbed the guy like he was going to throw him down. If he wasn't a little fat, bald guy, he would have thrown him on the ground.
Yeah. Bill Belichick. He's not going to leave
the guy didn't even break stride.
No, because he's like, who are you? You don't even.
And he was a science teacher in Minnesota or something. He was like, get off me.
What do you think would have happened if that was a player that did that?
He would have been suspended. That's what I'm saying. He would have been suspended if that was Santonio Holmes doing that. But no, it's Bill Belichick, and he clearly has a great track record, according to what he said.
I always find it funny when coaches actually try and do something physical, like when Jim Harbaugh and Schwartz and Schwartz was like trying to run after him and yell at him, and he just looks like such a dork.
Yeah, and Harbaugh's like, I played in this league.
I can't imagine. And Harbaugh is like, yeah, get off, dude. I know how to run after someone. I threw plenty of picks, so. My thought is, like, if you're a player and you see that, I feel like you got to lose a little respect for your coach.
Even after the loss, you think some of the Patriots, they suck. Come on, dude.
Yeah.
Gronkowski laughed.
Yeah, he definitely
Gronk was like, come on, dude. Let's get a drink.
Yeah.
Get out of here. Shut up, Bill Belichick.
Spike the ref.
So how about Golden Tate? This is him today, I think.
Golden Tate?
Today he says, I'm not going to deny pushing him. The evidence shows it on film, but like I said, I never had any intentions on cheating. I wasn't trying to cheat. I was competing. It was in the moment.
Yeah, I don't think it's cheating. I mean, it's against the rules, but it's not cheating like you're cheating. I mean, that happens all the time. You're going to call that a cheat every time somebody pushes off? Every time it's a pass interference, it's not cheating.
Yeah, but there's kind of like pushing off the separation, and there's like, I'm pushing you to the ground.
And it was a 60, right? It was still
in his back. Not like, yeah. And I was, we're jostling.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Well, no,
to
I mean, clearly
next...
it was against the rules, but I'm not going to count that as like cheating. That's not like they were cheating the rules. I mean, the guy broke the rules.
What is your definition of cheating?
That's not cheating, dude. So every holding penalty is a cheat?
Yes, you're cheating. You're breaking the rules.
That's not cheating. That's just a penalty. It just happened. It's in a heated moment.
Don't ever get caught with a mistress. I was breaking the rules. I wasn't cheating.
I was cheating. I just was breaking every rule.
Breaking every rule of marriage.
Go do your thing, Golden.
All right. How about you guys saw Cam Newton last week after the Giants were, you know, giving it to them. He was basically on the bench pouting.
Mm-hmm.
Sulk shake, yeah.
So they said that, I don't know where it came out initially, but they said they had hired a sports psychologist to help him. You know.
Oh, boy.
B.Y.
He says,
round two.
He says, I've not hired a sports psychologist. I have no idea where that came from. I have a strong support system in my teammates, coaches, and family. My focus is on improving this week and getting ready to play in Atlanta. To which, a couple days later, or I don't know if he said this a couple days ago, Ron Rivera comes out and says, yeah, I got a sports psychologist. I've been working with him for 10 years. So you're going to tell me that this guy's not helping Cam Newton? Come on.
Of course he is. And Steve Smith even got after him. Steve Smith, they got right in his face.
Yeah.
Little Steve Smith. And, yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, it was a horrible display altogether. He scores the touchdown. They're down 23-0. He does, still does
Superman
the Superman thing
yeah.
there. And then he's sulking at the end of the game. He was horrible.
Yeah.
Completely inaccurate, happy feet all over. I mean,
well, he was just locked in. He would get locked into receivers, and he just, you got to look him off. You got to go through your reads. Just,
yeah, yeah.
That's
what I thought he would have been last year. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like
yeah.
everybody thought he would be. You know, you can't just get away with the athleticism. He did it to an extent last year. You want to sip of that bourbon?
That
maybe?
Got
he was just going to take it in the face. All right, what do you got?
I got so I got Shady McCoy and Human Yor going back at each other.
They hate each other, dude.
So
I love it.
Now he calls him a ballerina in a Giants uniform.
The fourth best lineman on the team.
Then they ask him, you know, is this for real? And he says, yeah, this is for real. I don't like OC. He says, I don't know how he feels. He might think it's a game, but I don't play those types of games. So every time I'm on the field, I would say stuff to him like, you're a bum. You're the third defensive lineman on defense, which I didn't lie. Wait, I did lie. He's the fourth now, he says. So, actually, I did lie.
Well, this is just – I love watching these guys. I mean, he wishes them Happy Mother's Day.
yeah, on Twitter, they're all after it. I guess Happy Mother's Day. Oh, I love that stuff. Oh, you used to hate that kind of stuff. To me, that's why you play sports.
Yeah.
I think it's awesome.
Yeah.
And Shane McCoy's like 5'8". Like, he's this little dude. And he's just like, all right, man, I'm going to talk my trend. I love it. Especially a rivalry, Eagles-Giants. I mean, anybody doesn't like that. Why do you watch sports? I love that stuff.
Yeah, and I have a feeling that with the replacement refs in place, there's going to be a lot of extracurricular activities.
It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah.
And I think Austin Romero is great. I love him, too. So
I think he might go off. I mean, he's the kind of guy – he's one of the guys that I always have said he's just – he seems to, like, turn it on and off. Like, he'll just go off for 6 sacks in the game, and you're like, this guy's a legend. And then the next game, he'll be a ghost and won't play. So it's like,
he's notorious for slow starts in the season. He's the king of the strip sack and all that. Give me a good game. I love it.
So the other day at the bar, Chris Chelios, you guys remember him, former NHL player.
Hockey guy.
Burns a Jay Cutler jersey in the bar in front of the whole place.
Jay Cutler is donezo.
Just
done
the thing. You never actually see his face, but you hear people like, you know, yelling, oh,
hey,
Chelios,
that's Chris Chelios. Chris Chelios, former NHL player.
So, I mean, what do you think about that? That just seems...
That is the death knell for Jay Cutler. Chris Chelios is a god in Chicago.
Yeah.
There is not one person in Chicago that doesn't like Chris Chelios.
Yeah. Doesn't have a double chin, which helps. Jay Cutler's got the double guy, got the gobble going. That's a death knell for him. And it's crazy because I think he is a good quarterback. I mean, he hasn't, you know, he's hit or miss as well.
But, you know, I used to be a Jay Cutler fan, and I saw him play in college one game. It was Vanderbilt versus LSU, and he just looks like his arm is just amazing. That's it. He's got a strong arm, you know.
Kill him,
Jeff.
Fantasy football.
Jeff George had a strong arm.
Yeah, Jim Drunkenmiller had a cannon.
Jim Drunkenmiller.
What are you going to do? I mean, there's a lot of guys with a strong arm.
All right, last one. So the 76ers say that Bynum is better than Dwight Howard. They say he's going to need two defenders to stop him. I would say he's the best big man in the NBA right now, hands down. He's the guy that can give you baskets with his back to the hoop, a guy who can who makes free throws at 7 feet. You just got to respect him.
You know my feeling. I put him against ahead of Sean Kemp. You were pissed. You know I love Andrew Bynum. My love, as a Nets fan, if you were to say everybody's afraid you had to go after Dwight Howard or Andrew Bynum, I'm telling you I would take Andrew Bynum because I just can't stand Dwight Howard as a human being. But I love, and I know Bynum's got some issues too. He quits and does pouts and all that stuff. But that guy's a beast. He's a traditional center. He's going to be a big, he's an impact player. I mean, I love Andrew Bynum. He's still only like 24, right? He came right out of high school.
Yeah.
He's a young dude.
I don't see how you can compare the two, especially right now, because Dwight's still hurt, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got like a back issue?
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't understand. They actually gave the guy from the 76ers the out in that situation. Say, oh, you know, he's coming off back. He said he didn't care. Didn't matter. Hurt or not, he's still not as good.
I don't think it's a ridiculous thing to say. Although I do think.
It's not ridiculous, but I don't know. It's just a weird comparison.
To compare centers. Yeah, it is weird to go center for center.
No. I mean.
I mean, who? Who would have the gall?
No, I'm saying, isn't it a little too early to tell for Bynum?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then for Howard, I mean, you know, he's had these injuries over the past couple of years, and I feel like that
but bit, that's the
it's because people have this bitter taste in their mouth, and you know, I don't know why I keep defending Dwight Howard. I really don't know why, but you know, it's because it happened right. This past year and a half has been just an absolute, you know, Dwight Howard couldn't have messed it up any more than he did.
Right.
And so people have that sour taste in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, pure athletic ability.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think offensively Bynum is better. I don't think there's a question about that. I mean, you look at the percentage of points that Dwight Howard gets on dunks, you know, it's astronomical, but that being said,
they both
say the same thing about Shaquille O'Neal. I mean, it doesn't matter how you put the ball in the bucket.
Yeah.
He could put it in the bucket by a dunk all he wants. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I understand what you're saying there. I think that his breaking down offensive games, if they were to play one-on-one somewhere, I think Bynum would beat him. But that's not how the game is played. I think that when Dwight Howard is healthy and he's surrounded with you know, a good point guard and guys that can get him in the ball in the right spot, it's very hard to defend him, and defensively he is better than Bynum. But I'm telling you, the reason the comparison is being made is obviously because of the trade. So you look at it and you're saying, you know, the Sixers are saying, we just got, you know, Andrew Bynum. I would rather have Andrew Bynum than Dwight Howard right now, and that's what they're saying. You know what I mean? So what are the Lakers doing?
If he's saying right now?
Yeah.
Right now?
Yeah, but what are the Lakers doing getting rid of a Bynum? You know what I'm saying? To get Dwight Howard. Even if it is, you know, he's still coming off an injury and he's still older. And even though he's not old, but he's older than Bynum. So it's like, why did they do that? Why did they, you know, why did they think they needed to do that trade? Other than the star power.
Well, there's a star power. I think Dwight wanted to be there. I'm not so sure that Andrew wanted to be there.
No, he wants to be a more integral part of the offense. So I think that what's going to happen is this guy's going to be proven right in the fact that Bynum will put up bigger numbers, but because he'll be asked to do a bigger offensive role.
Yeah.
So you're going to look at it, and he's going to say, see, Bynum's averaging 21 a game, and Dwight Howard.
Yeah, but that's.
I know, I understand. Yeah, it's not apples to apples because you're not in the same, you know, they're not going to be getting the same looks. But so I think that in hindsight, this guy's saying this, and at the end of the year, you're going to say, see, Bynum put up bigger numbers, but he's going to be asked to be an offensive powerhouse in Philadelphia, you know?
I mean, you don't think that Howard carried the Magic for a couple of years? I mean.
I think he did. I mean, you know. And they were a perennial playoff team.
I just think just recent history, when it's all said and done, I don't think Bynum's going to be a better player than Dwight Howard.
20 years from now, we're going to look back, we're going to say Dwight Howard is better.
It's going to go Howard, Bynum. I just don't see Bynum realizing his potential. I don't think he's going to be that breakout star. I think he's going to put up decent numbers. I don't think he's going to – I mean, he'll be an all-star.
I think Bynum will be an all-star if he stays healthy. He'll be an all-star every season for this contract, for the next 5 or 6 years in the East.
Yeah, I'm not arguing that. I'm just saying, I just think impact player that can carry a team. I don't think Andrew Bynum can carry a team.
You know, I do. I do think that. That's how good I think
they'll make the playoffs. They'll make, what, 7-8 seed, something like that?
Ain't going to beat the Brooklyn Nets. That ain't going to happen.
All right, last one. So a couple weeks ago, I don't know if it was a month or so ago, Chris Perez. Did you see
the
clip of him in Oakland? Just owning that guy in the stands. The guy's talking trash to him, and he walks over and just, you know, blasts him. So the other day,
the same dude who puked, right, on the field?
Was it really?
Yeah. Chris Perez had a great year last year, and everybody loved him, and then started off this year, and he was terrible.
So
but, go ahead.
He's talking to a reporter the other day, and the reporter's asking him, this is exact questioning. So a reporter says, how have you managed to stay sharp between save opportunities? He says, I've had a lot of practice. And the reporter goes, what's been your routine? Because you wouldn't expect to go 6 or 7 or 8 games between save opportunities. To which he responds, have you watched us this year? We haven't been in 7 or 8 games in a row.
and he's like, I didn't mean that to be offensive to my teammates.
Like, what is I don't know much about this guy, but he seems like he does.
He's a joker.
He's a character, yeah.
He's a joker. He's a closer for the last place team.
Yeah.
Well, it is what it is. So I don't know. That's a good way to finish the say what segment. We got 10 minutes. Instead of a 5 and 10, let's just talk a little about baseball. We've actually been neglecting baseball. Now we got a week left in the season. We got to talk about it. We got to talk first about the Yankees and that race. It's been a crazy race. They went a stretch of almost a full calendar month of being no more than a game apart, which is, I think, a record.
September 1st or something like that.
And I think that it was either a record or one of the most since, like, 1950 or 1940, where there's been a race in September that's never been more than a game apart. It's been super exciting, and Yankee fans aren't really used to this, you know, towards the end of the year as much. But it's been great. I've never really wavered in the fact that I thought that the Yankees were going to win the division. And now they're going into the last 9 games, whatever, they do have you know, they have an easier schedule than the Orioles. But it is beginning to look like the Orioles are going to be a playoff team, which is fantastic for Baltimore.
No,
we got a lot of friends. We got a lot of Orioles friends that have gone to school down there. You know, it is a strong fan base for a team that's been bad since the mid-90s, you know. So it's exciting. I would love – I mean, the Orioles are winning now big. They're 2 games back after the Yankees win today. They could bring them back down to a game and a half. It would be interesting to see if it was, you know, tied or a game apart and the Yankees are playing Boston that last week. And can Boston conjure something up? And
Boston's going to be a serious – they're already spoiling
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine, like, the last week, they're just going to be in spoiler mode.
I mean,
Bobby Vietes, like, he lives for that kind
of
stuff.
Loves it. He loves every minute of it. So, you know, it'll be exciting. So, and the way that the – playoffs are now set up. It is a huge, huge advantage, obviously, to win that division. You know, it's funny. We sat there 2 weeks ago and we both admitted we were wrong about CC Sabathia, about how, you know, O is like, oh, you know, he's
we were wrong about being wrong.
Yeah. And now, since then, he's gone out his last 2 starts.
Yeah.
When they really needed him, he won again today. So he's gone 16 innings. Giving up 2 runs to an ERA.
I think someone forwarded him the link to the podcast.
Yeah, he was like, I'll show the Tri-State Sports guy.
Oh, really, Mike D'Anio?
He's got a whip well under 1. He's got 23 strikeouts in 16 innings, 21 strikeouts in 16 innings. Just been the ace. His velocity's up, everything. Everything that all the Yankee fans were worried about, he's been there. But I think it's key for them to win that division so that he's not just pitching that one game to get him in and then you know, he only gets to pitch 1 game in that first playoff series. Now, the other races in baseball are tight. Now, the other divisional races are pretty settled, but other than, obviously, the American League Central. Now, whatever team loses that division is not going to make the playoffs. They're
right.
Like 4.5, 5 games out. Who do you think wins that division?
I mean, you know, on paper?
You got to say the Tigers.
Tigers.
Right? I mean, you got a triple crown candidate. You got the best pitcher in baseball.
It's kind of mind blowing how they haven't taken that division over. But you know, just the White Sox just have some dominant pitching that has been able to carry them. So, I mean, you know, I don't think the White Sox, just from a fan's perspective, if I'm going to watch the playoffs, I don't think I want to watch the White Sox. I'm going to watch the Tigers. I feel like they provide there are more personalities on the team. They can provide more storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean. I know Obama says that the White Sox are going to face the Nationals in the World Series, and I think that's why he's going to lose the election.
I would say the same thing. He's like, well, I'm from Chicago, and I work in Washington. I'm going to pick those
you
teams.
Are, I mean, you were just alienating the Detroit vote. You can't
and the polls are so
they have
biased.
Nothing else to do in Detroit except watch baseball and vote. And
right.
Now you just
they're not even working.
Yep.
I got dogs over in the city.
Dogs.
So yeah, I'm with you that Detroit. It'll be amazing to me if Detroit doesn't win, but you know, the White Sox have been there all season long. They've basically been ahead in that division all season long. I mean, the Indians early on in the season were kind of good. You knew they were going to fade. They faded. Detroit made a push in July and took over, and then you know the White Sox came right back. You're seeing resurgence out of Dunn. His power numbers are way up. He's over 40 home runs. Rios is having a bounce back year. Beckham's having a decent year, although he's been slumping lately. I'm rooting for Detroit. I like Jimmy Leland. I love Miguel Cabrera. I love Prince Fielder. There's guys I like on that team. I love Verlander. I wish he dated hotter girls than Kate Upton. But I guess, you know, if you're a pitcher, you got to go. You got to really
take what you can get.
I guess you take what you can get. That's right. I mean, I don't think you would settle for a Kate Upton, but whatever.
I mean, in our little inner circle of players, we call her scraps.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe late, you know, last call.
Leftovers.
Leftovers. LOs in Neil's terminology.
Kate, so, I'm kidding. I'll see you at home.
Kate, I'm just teasing you. I'm rooting for Detroit, but I don't know that they're going to win it. I'm really not. I can't pick that because it's insane how you know, inconsistent they've been. And if it wasn't for a Triple Crown season, they'd be out of it. And how just consistent and resilient these White Sox are. So as a fan, why am I not? I'm not a fan of Detroit. Why am I not rooting for the White Sox? I don't know. We should be rooting for the White Sox. They're like an underdog team. They were not, you know, new manager, ex-Met. Why are we not rooting for the White Sox? Explain to me
that's
that.
That's true. I do like Ventura over Leland, but I do want to see Leland go out in a blaze of glory in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just epically lose it because Ventura is an even-keeled kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's not Nolan Ryan out there, then he's an even keeled kind of guy.
Yeah, right. The only thing that pisses him off is a 46-year-old Hall of Famer.
Yeah.
He just wants to get the crap beat out of him.
But going down the stretch, you look at the White Sox record. They got the Indians and the Rays, and the Tigers had the Royals and the Twins. Now, the Twins are no pushover.
No.
But I would much rather face the Twins than the Rays, and that's why I think the White Sox are going to come up short.
Now, it's interesting you bring up the Rays. So they're three games out, but you're willing to say that they're probably not going to make it, right? I mean, at this point,
I'm not rolling them out.
You don't think so? I mean, they can go out and sweep the Tigers up and knock the Tigers out and get right in. And then, you know, that would be obviously something that everybody wants to see the Rays in because they're that team that's so easy to root for. And then the other team in the hunt, you got the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
It boggles my mind, team. It boggles my mind.
They were so bad at the beginning of the year. They made this, and they were like, oh, now they're playing well. They're gonna, and then they went so bad again, and you're like, how are they not better?
Frankie
last night has 13 strikeouts in 5 innings. Just amazing.
I watched a Rangers-Angels game last week. It was like the first time I've ever really seen the Angels play.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at every guy come up, and it's like 30-some-odd home runs, like 80-90 RBIs, slugging percentage, blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, how the hell is this team not better than the A's? Like, it's just the A's that are, like, summoning the money ball, you know, ghost.
Yeah.
It's just ridiculous to me. And, you know, the A's, I don't know. I'm pulling for the A's more than I am the Angels, but this is where I wish there was like a loophole where you could just have like a Survivor Series type playoff.
Yeah.
Because it's such a close race. It's such a close race that, you know, why not open up the wild card to like 4 more teams?
Why not? It should be
whatever happened to hockey
tournament. Everybody gets in. It's like conference tournaments. You know, just everybody gets in and you'll see what happens, what shakes out. You know, the A's were a team. Some idiot on this show said it was going to have the worst record in baseball. I don't remember. I think it might have been I couldn't have been me.
Yeah.
In their bold predictions. The A's are just an amazing team. I mean, they always seem, we knew they had some good young pitching and their pitching has been great, but their offense in the second half has been unbelievable. You know, it's like they led the majors in home runs in August and they got Josh Donaldson playing. It's amazing. So, you know, I think the National League's pretty much set. I mean, Cardinals have a 4.5 game lead. I don't think they're going to get it. So the focus is completely on the American League. You know, you wonder if we're going to have – nothing could duplicate the last day of the season last year.
Well, there's a very outside scary possibility that the Nats lose that division and have to play a one-game playoff, and I am praying to Allah that that happens.
Oh,
that they go into a one-game wild card playoff. They don't have their number one ace because they shut them down, and they lose to, like, the Cardinals.
That would be – that would be the best thing that could happen.
Early Christmas.
That would be.
Mom, cancel the gifts.
Yeah, I don't need anything. I got it because I was right and the GM for the Nationals was wrong. Well, that's the end of the show, guys. Check us out every week, same time, 8 o'clock on Wednesdays. We'll see you next week after a Jets win.
Yeah.